You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Clark, thank you so much for staying with us here on the UCBS Mackayza Show. This hour, we focus on the transportation sector. And fittingly, that was the last issue that I spoke to the executive mayor of Johannesburg about a couple of minutes ago. It is crucial because vectors for transmitting the virus include us as human beings, objects where the virus lands, but also the modes of transport, the ways in which you and I get around the city, whether we talk about trains, whether we talk about e-hailing services, the buses, the minibuses. And that's why we have invited all the different major industry players that are involved in the transportation sector to be part of this conversation. Everyone is busy in a good way, showing leadership and trying to make a practical difference. So the way we're going to handle it is not to have a choir of people talking at the same time. The minister himself is very busy. So we're going to speak firstly to him. And then as the hour unfolds, I'm going to be speaking to the National Taxi Alliance, to the Private and Public Transport Association, also to the Gautrain Management Agency. Unfortunately, the e-hailing services are not part of this conversation. And I'll tell you a little bit later about their attitude. Uber in particular have been uber arrogant and I think uber irresponsible. Really a massive letdown as a company. And during a time when we can least afford that to be the case. I really hope that if we come out okay on the other side of this, Uber should rethink their brand strategy, and in particular, whoever it is that they have in charge of communicating with the media. Absolutely horror show in terms of the comms with my producer, but more about that later. Right now, I want to speak to the Minister of Transport, who has seen it appropriately fit to talk to us, Minister Fikile Mbalula. Minister, good morning to you, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
Good morning, Eusebius, and all the listeners. Thank you for having us.
Minister, I'm not going to keep too much of your time. I really just want to catch up on some of the most important issues. Before I get into specifics, can we talk about cooperation and just reflect for me on that? You know, every time I think about what are the chances that we will flatten the curve, I was saying to a doctor friend of mine late last night, I keep coming back to the same conclusion that we all have to work together, both the state as well as non-state actors, private citizens, private companies, because the reality is that unless we take civic duty seriously, many people can fall ill, many people may also die. The state can do a lot, but you can't do it alone.
You are right, Eusebius. Just to cut to the chase, our biggest aggressors is the poorest of the poor mode of transport that they use. And we unfortunately are weighing up options of what further action we need to take to support them in the trains. We are doing sanitizing to support there and to ensure that some of those measures are implemented. And we are doing surgical mask support for the workers at the trains, and which must apply also surgical mask support for the taxi drivers. But over and above that, Eusebius, we need to make contact and overcrowded numbers, and it will affect them adversely in terms of getting to work as they don't have any other means. One of the things I can tell you is that we're discussing in our war room now the support for giving them masks and all of that, and then also putting our foot down on the numbers in the carriage per train. If that does not improve, we will have to move to another level to ensure that we stop the trains.
What conversations are you having with the decision makers in those sectors, whether we talk about the trains, whether we talk about, for example, the National Taxi Alliance? Before we declare a state of emergency, the ideal first step is that we have cooperation and that everyone is on the same page and that we try and use the carrot rather than the stick. Tell us precisely what you've done in terms of conversations and whether your social partners in each one of those different sectors of transportation, are they on message and on board?
Well, Santaco, we discussed with them first thing. We still have got to meet the rest. NTA, it is very difficult to meet them. They are very busy. But we hope to see them before end of the week, because these meetings are emergency meetings. We don't want Santaco only. We want everybody. To the last man who owns one taxi on the ground. It's not the time to talk to associations only. But I appreciate the Serbians that they've given. Because only confining ourselves to organized formations when it comes to public transport will not give us an opportunity to expand on the ground and everywhere else. But associations are very, very important. In terms of PRASA, the whole management of PRASA, led by Bongi, the administrator there, they are on board, and we're discussing with them to implement measures. I'm going to be engaging with the unions. They've got suggestions that they are bringing on board, and I will see them before end of, before Sunday. So I'm leaving Cape Town now. So today and tomorrow and onwards is proper consultation and ensuring that the measures we have agreed in all our environment are implemented: aviation, maritime, public transport, rail, and so on.
Okay, just two or three more questions, and then I'll let it go for today, Minister. Let's keep it very practical. When we go to our, say, taxi ranks, you've got hundreds and hundreds of commuters who are there. The same with busy train stations. We've got, as you say, on our trains, people hanging out of the coaches. They are completely overcrowded. Do we really have the ability, from a state point of view, to enforce the rule around social distancing and keeping specifically the number of commuters low? I mean, for example, at a practical level, if you go to Noord, if you and I go there, how are we supposed to interpret the president's pronouncements from the other night? Would Noord itself, as a node of internodal transportation, as a hub, is it now inconsistent with the pronouncement? That is unclear to me. Maybe I missed the obvious.
No, we're obviously grappling with the implementation. What it means in terms of the regulations that have been signed by COCTA last night, it means that we must not have more than 100 people in the nodal spaces of mode of transport gathering in a space, meaning over congestion. It can be in the maritime, in the public transport, and all of that. The regulation says that. So which means taxi industry must then ensure that the number are minimized, and also numbers inside the taxi, which is 15 people per taxi, it means they must go down. And then increase the number of taxis and ensure that the workers who are driving taxis are actually protected, the taxi is sanitized, and then the whole environment of the taxi rank itself is basically sanitized. So those are the rules now. It's no longer, it has moved from pronouncement to rules, meaning it's a law. It means that there can no longer be so many people gathering in long queues and so on. So practically how we achieve that, as you said, yes, is going to be a big Achilles heel for us, but it has got to be done.
But if we go to Randburg taxi rank, for example, right now, we will see that the behavior of the taxi drivers, the commuters, and without even moralizing, we know what drives the behavior, Minister, that they are now inconsistent with what COCTA had pronounced last night. So what is going to happen practically to enforce it?
We need to forewarn them from tomorrow, but at the same time seek that they understand the rules and they come to the party. What it means is that if they don't abide by the rules, taxi the ranks throughout the country, it means the taxi industries that are in charge of taxi ranks must apply the rules. If they don't apply the rules as pronounced and gazetted, then they risk the possibility of closing a taxi rank, because it then becomes a risk area.
And then second last question, on the taxis themselves, are you putting a limit on the number of commuters? I mean, it was an interesting what the mayor of Joburg said to me, that, for example, if you have 3-seater benches, the middle one must be open. That is a city level decision that they have taken. But as a minister and pronouncing nationally, are there any specific guidelines now that are effectively becoming law in terms of numbers of passengers inside the taxis themselves?
We have not done that. We've got the regulation. The minister, in terms of the regulation, is allowed to pronounce further on the guidelines. So I've not pronounced on that in terms of numbers. But in the context of the regulation, what is required of me is to limit those numbers from 15 downwards so that there is a reasonable number of people in the taxi that can breathe and all of that. So what is important equally, Sebius, is that we must limit unnecessary movement. Mm-hmm. This thing of just waking up, getting to a taxi because you're going to look for a job and all of that, or you're visiting somebody, limit that, stay at home. But those movements like, I got no choice, I'm going to work, they can be welcomed in the context of the law.
Okay, my listeners are wanting a piece of you. I can't allow that, but here's a dominant question they want of you. Google says, will they provide sanitizers, Eusebius, for the taxi industry? It's going to be hard for them to make sure there's less than 100 people at MTN Taxi Rank in Joburg, but to ask the minister about sanitizers. It's a peaceful minister says, please don't lie. There are no sanitizers. And as a picture of what happened this morning by way of example, there's no way you can avoid social distancing in a train. On sanitizers, what are you providing that the trains, on the trains, and also to the taxis?
There's not been any provision, but the taxi carriages are sanitized, and it means the taxi also must apply that. Now, you must understand that some of these pronouncements were made without regulations being gazetted. Now that the regulations have been gazetted from yesterday and last night, then they become law and everybody must apply them. It is not a law. It is an intention that things must happen and they may not be happening as you would have pronounced. But the regulations require that they be implemented. Yes, Eusebius, I will demonstrate to South Africa that I've met with the ministers because transport is a concurrent function. I've met with MECs and we have agreed that the government will use part of its resources to support sanitizing for the taxi industry. We will also support in highly congested areas, which the rules now have said it is law that those areas must not be congested.
Yeah.
We will support with screening, working with port health, and that is what is going to happen going forward.
And a parting question. Someone wants to know from you why you talk about, I think slightly different to our conversation, but possible quarantining as opposed to compulsory quarantining. If someone had come from a high-risk country, here's an example. A friend, says Clement, landed from Germany yesterday, was screened, and he's in quarantine for 14 days. But it's basically, you know, not compulsory quarantining. What's the difference between possible and compulsory, and why are we not doing compulsory quarantining? Do you have a view on that?
The regulations in terms of aviation kicked in last night. You will have seen that there have been discrepancies where people arrived from infected countries. And then there were complaints about those people, how they were handled at our airports. From last night, from yesterday, I've signed regulations now. They have been gazetted. It means the United States planes, and I've explained even in the press conference, I will repeat again.
Yes.
There is a process of repatriation for those who claim that our planes were already on air before the regulations. But by Friday, that repatriation will have come to an end. It means we don't expect aeroplanes and traveling between United States and South Africa in terms of the regulation. Should that happen, then measures will be taken in relation to the regulations we have put into place. That plane land at OR Tambo, it will be quarantined, and it will be taken to an apron where in which people will be checked, and then they will be quarantined and will be sent off back with their plane from where they came from.
Minister, I'm gonna...
That happens even in the seas in terms of ship crews. For ship crews, it means that there are those people who were, before we introduced the, like the MSC, who decide to take off to go to Mozambique and they are on their way back. Now, in terms of the regulations, they will be quarantined and be processed. embarkation and disembarkation from now onwards is not allowed on the cruise ships. But for the cargo, they are allowed, but they are not allowed to disembark. And in relation to that, the workers at the cargo site, from our side, will have to be supported by Port Authority in terms of ensuring that they've got surgical masks and all of that protective gear so that they don't get infected.
Minister, as always, we really appreciate it. You're coming on this platform, not least when there's so much work you need to do. I'll let you get on with the main business of the day.
Always available in this time, your service. Thank you. All right.
Thank you. That's the Minister of Transport, Fikile Mbalula.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702 for the curious.
Okay, on this theme of transportation, you heard me ask him a question about his relationship as minister with the Taxi Alliance, the National Taxi Alliance in particular, and he said it was hard to get hold of them. This is an emergency. He hopes to meet with them before Friday, at least, which should be tomorrow. And next I'm speaking to the national spokesperson of the National Taxi Alliance, who was listening in on that conversation with the Minister of Transport. Theo Malele now joins me. Theo, good morning to you and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Eusebius, and good morning to the 702 listeners.
Just on this small point, before we get to the important big issues, from a process point of view, have you reached out to or have you been reached out to from the minister and the ministry?
Basically, the minister has been very conservative with the truth. This issue of us being too busy to meet with him, it's not true. We've always been available. It is his office that has been shifting meetings for more than three times. So we are basically prepared to meet with him, even if he were to call us today or tonight. We would do that. This is, you know, the attitude at NTA. We actually make time.
Okay. Well, I hope that meeting will happen, because we need everyone that have enormous power and responsibility to be in the same room for the sake of the country.
Absolutely, absolutely, I agree with that.
Now, in terms of what the minister was saying and what has now been promulgated, let's now talk about the actual substantive issues. The taxis in this country and taxi owners and the taxi alliances, you play a critically important role, one that is often underappreciated in the life of our country for all sorts of obvious historical reasons. How are you feeling about how central taxi owners and your leadership must be immediately to help comply with the regulations pronounced by COCTA last night, but also by the city of Johannesburg and the president's statement a couple of days ago?
Well, much as I agree with the president's statement, and as a patriotic South African, we need to do something about this pandemic. But safe to say, I have to also make, place my displeasure on record in terms of applying unfair rules. You cannot begin by reducing the capacity of, I know for a fact that, people should not misconstrue my reasoning here. I understand that, there has to be the social distancing. The taxi industry, it is, however, a business. And most of these vehicles have been old. And as an industry, we have to meet our monthly, financial obligation in form of installments. So if capacity of passengers is being reduced, will the government then augment for that? And also given the fact that the government has been dragging its feet regarding the subsidization of the taxi industry, and they're busy pumping money in modes like the Gautrain, who ferries, the upward mobile people who do not need financial support. And the buses that have been forever, even from the dark days of apartheid, being supported by government coffers, and the taxi industry has been neglected. And, these are issues. And one other thing is that of controlling the entrance of, passengers at taxi ranks. We really need to educate the public at large that we must change the manner in which we do things because of the sake of our health. So instead of people walking from any point, any geographical point, into a taxi rank, there has to be proper entrance, you know, systems. You know, we may not, you know, erect, you know, walls or something, but there has to be that standard, you know, maybe a pointer to say this is where you enter the rank, so that you are able, you are sanitized and so forth and so on. We really need to join hands in order for us to be able to can you know, quell and contain this pandemic.
Okay, there's a couple of issues I want to pick up on, because I hear you on your concerns in terms of what is government going to do to release the burden from the economic side for the industry. And that's one of the issues that need to be discussed precisely when you are in the same room, when that meeting happens. And I hope the minister is now going to reach out to you. Otherwise, we'll hold him accountable, Theo. But I'll come back to that issue in a minute or two.
Eusebius Makaiza. Eusebius Makaiza. On 702.
25 minutes before 11 o'clock, we are focusing this hour on the transport sector, critically important. Millions of South Africans on a daily basis commute on public transportation in different modes, and therefore our chances of preventing, containing and managing COVID-19 will in part, in huge part, be a function of whether or not we get right what happens at taxi ranks, what happens on our trains, and also what happens when you take a Bolt or an Uber ride. And that's why we are having these conversations. And you heard from the minister, and currently we are speaking to the national spokesperson for the National Taxi Alliance for a couple more minutes. And then after that, we're going to move on and talk about e-hailing services. Theo, I'm deeply sympathetic, and that's why a little bit later, to give you one example of the economic breathing space we need to open up for all businesses, I'll be speaking to the banking sector, because we need, for example, to examine the possibility, firstly, the government, of a massive cash injection maybe, or some kind of bailout, some kind of help for small and medium enterprises and for businesses like taxi owners when it comes to paying our mortgages, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot going on in the economy simultaneously with this public health crisis. I've got sympathy there. But I wanted to ask you this question. As Minister Fikile Mbalula said, here's the bottom line. Once something is gazetted, it is effectively, unless challenged and overthrown, law. And while it's a horrible choice between you need the business so that you can continue with your payments, for example, are you saying that you would be prepared to not comply with regulations?
Now, look, basically, there isn't, you know, a reason for us to start, you know, pet fights. And the minister must also stop his nepotistic favoritism. You know, we have so many ranks. He just went to one rank with Santaco yesterday and avoided all these other ranks. And I've been getting calls from throughout the country. So basically, every problem has a solution. And definitely, if we sit down and discuss these issues, we are most likely going to find a solution. Because, you know, we need to save our country, we need to save ourselves, and, you know, we all need each other during this time. Mm-hmm. So it is not a time for us to start, you know, mudslinging and stuff.
So let's set aside the question of the minister, the state, and your relationship with them. Let's now talk about you in terms of what you can do to demonstrate your own sense of civic duty, even with the constraints that we are talking about. Theo, how are you guys as the National Taxi Alliance thinking through what you can do to do your bit to try and help prevent, contain and manage COVID-19?
All right. We have partnered with Onquela. It is a black-owned company. They have developed an app. And that app will assist in informing, you know, passengers on a daily basis. And they've also went an extra mile and purchased a bulk supply of sanitizers. We'll be getting those delivered next week. And we also are engaging our other corporate partners to get more supply so that we are able to can, you know, reach all taxi ranks and our passengers throughout the country.
The idea of social distancing, we are all slowly learning new language, but the phenomenon that it describes is not a difficult one to understand. Are there any guidelines that you have for taxi owners and drivers when it comes to numbers of passengers that they are ferrying and how they handle the flow of passengers in and out of the taxis and at the taxi ranks? Forget about the state, just from what you now know about COVID-19.
We basically need to engage with, because taxis are individually owned.
Okay.
And we need to speak to the respective owners so that they understand that their revenue is going to be affected. And therefore, we need to move with haste. And obviously, a question will come, will arise in that what is this that's going to happen, to their, installments. Well, good. You've spoken about engaging them a little later on, but we need those kind of guarantees so that we are able to can convince our members to really accept this. I really know and understand that social distancing is one of the best strategies for us to contain this from spreading, and quickly we will be engaging our queue marshals. So that we capacitate them, and we try maybe and put on ribbons around ranks, and get people to enter, using one particular entrance point or two entry points, and also to try and depend also on media to assist in teaching the public out there that they have to maintain the distance. Amongst themselves, because the next thing there'll be long queues and people will be standing right next to each other, and that will defeat, the purpose. So we really need each other in this respect in order that we win at the end of the day.
A last question for today, Theo, and I'm appreciative of the time you're taking out, because I want you to get on with telling the minister, hey, we heard you on 702, we've been available, because that meeting must happen for all of our sakes, and we'll keep tabs on you and the minister whether it happens. But I wanted to ask you this. Vulnerable workers...
You ask me, if the minister does not come to us, I will definitely call you 702 and let you know, and basically all the media houses throughout the country.
Yeah, call me. Call me directly. I'm more than happy. And I'll reach out to the minister and hold him accountable. I wanted to ask you this. There are many vulnerable workers who also potentially can be, because of their relative lack of economic power, become infected but also infect others. Drivers are a key category. They work long hours. The drivers often have perverse incentives to drive poorly, to not stick to the rules around passengers. Maybe there's incentives involved in terms of how much money they make per day and that kind of thing. They could potentially become infected because of the thousands and thousands of commuters they interface with daily. They could also be a key part of the exponential transmission that might happen in our society. Do you have any guidelines for your taxi owners as an association in relation to the drivers? Because the drivers are going to be critical in this conversation. Where do they fit in?
Yeah, look, it's not only the drivers, but let's first deal with the driver. The drivers are encouraged to put on masks and use rubber gloves, and also ensure that the vehicles are sanitized before any trip is been undertaken.
Do they have those? Where do they come from?
We have actually made it our own problem that we should fork out money, but not everybody is adhering to that. I have spoken to mine. And we're expecting everybody else to follow suit. And, as we talk to people, they'll always say, what is government doing? And, but we're trying to persuade people to abide by these rules, that drivers must be protected because they play a role, a pivotal role. And another issue is that of collecting cash. That's a problem. If it were possible, passengers should bring, sufficient, money for their fares, so that there is no, backwards and forward movement of changes and stuff. And they should basically pay before boarding the taxi, because there's also this tendency that people tend to pay while the vehicle is in motion, and that actually places their lives in danger.
Mm.
So it would be important for them to pay before boarding on taxis, and they should come with the exact amount of fare. Please, we're pleading with our passengers. Look, I must say, this thing caught us by surprise.
Of course, we
had not anticipated, its strength, and indeed, it's actually coming down on us like a ton of bricks.
Absolutely. And that's why I think it's important to not try and be clever and ask each other questions to embarrass one another, but we need to put our heads together collectively. Theo, thanks for coming on the show today. We'll check in with you again, but thanks for your contribution this hour.
Thank you very much for having us.
It's only a pleasure. That's Theo Malele, who's the national spokesperson for the National Taxi Alliance. The next person that I want to speak to is the chairperson of Private and Public Transport Association.
Know, live, transform. This is 702. This is 702. For the curious.
So we had someone calling in yesterday, Abel. Do we still have that audio? And it was interesting. This is someone who said to us that they are a driver of an e-hailing service, of both of them, of Taxify, now known as Bolt, as well as Uber. This is how the conversation played out.
I'm an Uber and Taxify driver, actually.
Mm.
Yes, we're having all of these people in and out of the car, touching the door handle, which they open when they come inside, obviously, exchanging money, change, and everything. How do you suggest that we work, or how can someone suggest that, how would we work as drivers to limit the corona, the spread when coming to that?
It's a very good question, Nico. Firstly, so both Taxify and Uber, have either of those two companies communicated with you as a driver in terms of helping you to make sure that you are as safe as possible, but also that the riders are safe as possible? Let's start with Uber. How have they communicated, and what have they communicated with you so far?
No, I have not found any message or anything communicating about this type of matter.
Wow. And Taxify?
No.
Have either of them given you even hand sanitizers to keep in the car?
No.
Things with which to clean in terms of disinfectants?
None of the above.
Have any of them given you guidance whether to pick people up from the airport?
No.
Have any of them told you what might happen if you were to be positive for COVID-19?
No, because it would be really, if I myself were to contract the virus, meaning I would be spreading it around.
And you would also have a loss of income. Have any of them reached out to you and said, this is what you must do to come and, I don't know, have, for example, your temperature checked, or here's a number you can dial if you think that you have the symptoms?
No.
Okay, so this is what we're going to do, Nico. Please listen to the show tomorrow. We're going to focus on transportation. Okay, so that was yesterday from a driver who works for both companies, and we know many drivers work with them at the same time. So joining me now is Vatuka Mbelengwa, who's chairperson of Private and Public Transport Association. Thank you so much for being part of this conversation, Vatuka, and for having listened to the other role players we had on in this sector. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Isiba. Thanks for having me.
Firstly, who are you?
My name is Vatuka Mbelengwa, and I think to state it simply, I am an active citizen of South Africa, and I'm an activist within the e-hailing sector.
But who do you speak on behalf? Because with corporates, they're going to lash out against you. I can tell you now, the first question I'm going to get once you are done from Uber, despite the fact that they arrogantly declined to be part of the conversation, is, who is this man? How do you know he's a driver? He can't speak on behalf of many drivers. So I'm just asking that question from the point of view of wanting to establish whether you have any legitimacy. Private and Public Transport Association, how did it come about, and who or what is it?
All right. So my journey started in the e-hailing industry several years ago. We have put together several demonstrations. We have represented drivers at the Competition Commission. we have represented drivers in the National Land Transport Transportation Act Bill, Amendment Bill. And we have put together many initiatives to support drivers who've been injured while being burnt. We have reached out to Uber on many occasions to try and engage with them. And I think our public track record in itself and our vocal presence speaks for itself in what it is we're trying to achieve with this industry.
And in terms of the drivers, both Uber and for that matter Bolt, what are the kinds of issues that they've raised with you? Because I've had one or two people on my Twitter timeline saying, here's a message that Uber sent us as a driver, Eusebius. This is different to what Nico said yesterday. And then I have, for every such example, other drivers that send me messages saying, we know nothing. No one has told us what would happen if we wanted to self-isolate, for example. Obviously, the company doesn't have a legal duty. They have been very careful in how they set up this company across the world to try and get out of certain legal responsibilities. But that doesn't mean they don't have social and ethical responsibilities. But let me shut up and just share with us stories. What are your concerns in the e-hailing sector during this time, and what are you hearing from the drivers?
Well, firstly, I think we need to acknowledge that the e-hailing community shuttles a lot of people from airports. And as the international community and the traveling community has been coming in and out, I think it's safe to say there's been a fair amount of exposure by drivers. So I think there's a responsibility to put some interventions in place to make sure that drivers get medical interventions if needed. Those who work primarily at the airport should be monitored and see if they need to be tested. Those who landed and were in contact with anybody who has been found positive need to be traced, and the app companies can be able to confirm who requested a vehicle at what point if they were willing to be cooperative with government and drivers at large.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, there's some basic things that I would have wanted to ask both Bolt and Uber, and neither of them wanted to be part of this conversation. I mean, you know, for example, you just heard the taxi alliance talking about the changing of money. You've got a cash option as a payment option with Uber. You can share services. Uber Eats is interesting. Takealot sent an email yesterday that I found really good, responsible citizenship, where when a Takealot delivery person comes to your house, they're not allowed to have physical contact with you. They now have to put the parcel some distance away from you where you indicated and take a few steps back as you approach it. Those are very simple things that can make a huge difference to help contain. And that those kinds of conversations, I assume, are not taking place with the drivers, are they?
Look, I've seen a few drivers take the initiative of ensuring that they sanitize their own vehicles. Drivers are carrying around water with salt water and beach water solution to regularly wipe down common contact areas within the vehicle. So there is a bit of proactiveness happening within industry, and I commend each driver who has taken up this initiative for doing so. In terms of the responses from the likes of Takealot, we are impressed with the proactiveness, but we'd also like to see drivers within that space get more support from them in getting protective gear, protective masks, sanitization solutions out to drivers. And in terms of Uber or taking any social responsibility or being proactive, I think it's important that we watch how companies behave on a global platform. And it's clear that Uber has no intent with building healthy relationships with operators. In fact, how they are investing in self-driving vehicles is very telling of the fact that they have no interest in the human element in this process.
Yeah, it's also the reason why they love giving us slogans such as, we are just a technology company that provides a platform for a rider and a driver to basically transact with one another and read the fine print. That is always the subtext of their communication, which really doesn't help. But let's set them aside and let's put their poor corporate leadership aside. What are other ways in which, drivers in the e-hailing sector are making a difference? If we take, for example, students, suddenly students find themselves having a day or two to vacate residences. Many of our students are poor. And I know the drivers themselves are under pressure as well in terms of income during this particular time. But are there things from a social responsibility point of view that this sector is doing off its own in the absence of leadership from the companies?
Well, you see, you know, this is a moment, I think, as drivers, where we have right to action to say we need to intervene because we have a responsibility as citizens of South Africa. Now, mobility has been a big dialogue in this breakout, whether it's public transport, and we've identified a need to, we are highly mobile. We've got thousands and thousands of vehicles accessible to us right now, and we are already feeling the economic impact of no work at all because people are not using us at this current moment. So we are in the process of trying to reach out to private sector organizations, civil society organizations, government to say, we are here, we are able, we have the tools to make you mobile and more efficient in fighting this outbreak. So we are saying to any organizations out there, if they want to partner with us, we can together shuttle a few kids home. We've got cars, provide us with some petrol. And this economic intervention can also help drivers survive because drivers live on a hand-to-mouth basis. And right now, there's nothing they can take home to their family.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct. And because many drivers aren't necessarily the owners of the vehicles either, that also means that not every driver even gets the maximum benefit of being a partner with Uber or being a partner with Taxify. They might get a portion of the week's takings. And so they are further squeezed in that particular regard. From an epidemiology point of view, the most important thing is to prevent infection and to contain it so that we can flatten the curve. What are you advising in terms of physically what must happen in the interaction between the driver and the rider? In terms of, I get into the car, the guy arrives at my house, or wherever it is, they arrive at my house, what happens? Have you got guidelines around that? And are you spreading that kind of conversation on WhatsApp? But what is the content of the messaging there?
Well, we are hoping to, by the end of today, release a step-by-step process that drivers can use to keep themselves a bit safer. But also hoping that the minister, you know, he's made pronouncements on how all public transportation must be sanitized. We're hoping he can extend that sanitization solutions to us as well and provide us with support in this moment so that we can ensure that we're not transmitting within our vehicles, you know, protective gear, masks, sanitization. So we're hoping that support. And, you know, we're hoping like institutions, medical institutions, NICD can also then reach out and guide us on how to then safely aid in shuttling people in this moment.
Absolutely.
You know, how do we then, you know, we understand the importance of getting students back home, mm-hmm. but we also don't want to then become a point of infection for students.
That's right. That's absolutely,
you understand?
Right. Yeah.
But it also comes down to a risk analysis that would we rather put one or two children in the back of an Uber-type vehicle, or we're going to put 65 students in a bus. You know, where does the greater risk lie in this moment?
Beautiful point. Your active citizenship is commendable, and I think it's important. Shame on Uber as a company for seeing this as some sort of zero-sum game in which testosterone and egos are more important than being ethically responsible. You keep on trying to do what you can with your agency, Vatuka, and where we can help from a media point of view, let's keep the communication channels open. Thank you so much to you for coming on.
Thank you so much, Eusebius. And just as a parting shot, I think it's important that we always remind ourselves that the vehicles are not owned by Uber, are not owned by Bolt. They are owned by many families who are just trying to survive in today's economic conditions, whether there's an outbreak or not. And it is with those communities that are going to be severely affected, and we're going to need community-based interventions. And we are here to provide mobile assistance to all those institutions that provide essential services.
Thank you, sir. Fatuka Mbelengwa, Chairperson, Private and Public Transport Association. I know the Uber office is listening. This guy's tone and content, that is how you make a difference or try to make a difference. Not by paying a crap load of money to a useless PR agency to try and block you from participating in an important national conversation. Final hour is William Dux. William is the CEO of Gautrain Management Agency. We were due to speak to him a little bit earlier, but of course the conversations are complex, and even though we've got a faster pace than normal on our show in the context of this pandemic, nevertheless, we do need to drill down into some minutiae every now and then. In that context, William, thank you so much for your generosity to agree to come on now, even though we planned to have you on earlier. Good morning to you.
Good morning, UCBS, and you're very welcome.
I just want to check in with you factually about what has happened. Obviously, Gautrain was trending. Many of my listeners used the Gautrain service. Who had tested positive, not the name of the person, and what is fact and what is fiction, just in terms of what had started off this concern that went viral, pardon the pun?
Yes, you see this. So what happened was last week, early in last week, when I think, I wouldn't say none of us, but few of us were taking the virus as seriously as we should have, there was a visitor who was a director of one of the subcontractors in the Gautrain system who came in from France.
Mm.
And he subsequently tested positive for COVID-19. So for the period when between his arrival and testing positive and obviously immediately moving into quarantine, he came into contact with a number of employees of various entities that work on the Gautrain. So it called for a very quick response, which I'm happy to say we did do. And up to 50 people were immediately moved into self-isolation and testing started immediately. I'm happy to say that all tests to date have come back as negative, but it's obviously an ongoing process. But I can confirm that everyone that this person had come into contact with had been removed from the system. The second step was then to go to wherever this person had visited on the system and at the depot and give it a really good disinfecting clean. And that was done immediately on Monday of this week. So there's a number of people who actually are in self-isolation at the moment working through this 14-day period. As yet, no positive tests have come back, but it's something that we take very seriously, you know, and we monitor it very, very closely.
Absolutely, as we all absolutely should. One of the things the world grapples with is case tracking. Even if people are honest and try and recall every single interface they've had with other human beings, it's hard to know, because particularly when you are asymptomatic and you are not a confirmed case, no one keeps a log, unless you're really weird, of every human being that you are encountering. And even if you did, some might be strangers, for example. How much progress have you made to be able to try and locate as much as one can in terms of what is practical to get a sense of informing anyone that could have been exposed?
Yeah, so you see, this, I don't think it's about this one gentleman. I think your point's absolutely valid. You know, there are a number of people around in society at the moment who probably have COVID-19, and we don't know who they are. So we're tackling this from the point of view of how on the Gautrain do we minimize the risk to them, of course, but also to other people. And that's where I think the Minister of Transport, and I was listening in earlier, was talking about sort of that five-point plan about how one tackles this. And the first thing is awareness and communication.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Sanitation, sanitizers, cleaning, all of that is important. But it's no use putting that stuff out, as we've done at the stations, and people don't use it. So the message that we want to get out is we put the sanitizers there, we stock up on cleaning hand wash liquids in our ablution facilities all the time. We'll never run out of stuff like that. But it's to urge people to use it all the time.
Mm.
And we'll play our part in cleaning stations. You know, so if someone did touch something and it turns out that they were positive, you know, sort of within, I would say, an hour of a touch, someone would have cleaned that particular touch point again. So we're minimizing those risks. But this really calls for a societal response, you know, and an individual awareness. I'll give you one example. Our MEC was on the system yesterday testing out our response and our precautions. And he commented how many people walk past the sanitizer. So he stopped them and he said, why didn't you sanitize? And they said, no, I washed my hands when I left the office.
Yeah.
Now, how many contacts have there been between office and coming into the system, you know?
Yeah.
So I think if all your listeners could sort of take this on board, and those who do use the Gautrain, to please use the sanitizers.
I couldn't agree with you more, William. I think that's critically important. I am like a stuck record because, as I again said this morning to a couple of my guests that I'd interviewed and to mates, this is going to be so crucial for us to get right at the level of personal responsibility and civic duty. And that framing is important. It doesn't mean that powers that be like yourselves don't have a gigantic duty in terms of making resources available, information campaigns, massively and simple messaging on the trains, etc., etc. But ultimately, social distancing is about what each of us do as private citizens. But I want to return to you in terms of resources. When we talk about deep cleaning, for example, and disinfectants, what does that mean, like, practically for Gautrain, and how often are you now doing that?
So you see, it's a ramp-up process. I mean, we obviously had cleaning staff to start off with, and we'd be supplementing that. The first change was in the actual disinfectant itself. We ramped up to a stronger alcohol-based disinfectant that I think has proven more effective. I'm not a medical expert, but I'm told that it's more effective in terms of cleaning and killing the virus. What also changed was the frequency. And as I say, we're ramping up. So by the end of this week, over the weekend, every train will be cleaned at the end of its trip. So if it travels from Park to Hatfield, it'll stop at Hatfield. Cleaners will jump on, and they will do a wipe down of all the areas, the sort of the touch points, you know, the door handle, press that opens the door, any grab handles, back of seat handles, etc. It is a process. We have to mobilize more resources on this, but we're getting there. And we do what we can with the resources that we have.
Yeah. Second last question, William. Personal protective equipment and other measures for your staff. If I'm not using my card to load more credit onto my Gautrain card, and I'm at the window and I pay cash, for example, the person on the other side might be getting might be touching my hand if I'm being overzealous and irresponsible, or even just the money that exchange hands, and we don't yet know how much of the virus could be lurking, even in dirty banknotes, for example. Have you thought about the vulnerability of your workers that interface with us? And in that regard, what are you doing for them?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that was the very first discussion was with employees, and especially the front-facing public interface ones. So gloves are an absolute, sanitizers, regular cleaning, hand-washing regimes, wipe-downs of all these desktops is all in place. I think the one where I'm personally not sure how to proceed is on masks. And I think there's some conflicting views on this. They might pose some health hazard if they used inappropriately. You know, apparently it stops the if someone's not infected, actually can build up more bacteria than they do get. So we're taking advice on that. Some staff are using masks, others aren't. And we're also going to be guided by what's coming out from the National Department and the Provincial Department of Health in this regard.
And then last question, stepping back from the detail, William, a lot of people respond, and one understands why they might do so, cautiously in relation to a headline. You've not taken steps. The first story goes viral, but people may not then read follow-up stories about what have you done in terms of containment, the measures that are in place. What is your message to South Africans who do use the Gautrain?
You see, it's a simple message. Limit your travel to non-essential travel. You know, we cannot say to the public that it's the perfect system, that you guarantee that you won't get the virus. So I think after that comes the point that we do everything that we practically can to make it as safe and as sanitary as possible. Because we know there are people who depend on us. There's still around 40,000 people per day using the Gautrain, and we're going to look after them.
Thank you so much for coming on the show. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you, CBS.
That is the CEO of Gautrain Management Agency, William Dex.